You are about to enter the pop, pulp, and subcultural minds of several individuals. What may leak into the ether can sometimes be too strange, too confusing for the average human mind. When nerds assemble.
Hello, and welcome to episode 20 of the Nerds Assemble podcast. I'm Emily.
I'm Paul.
I'm Paul, aka Cookie.
And I'm Paul, aka Retroid.
And we've got some lovely things to discuss with you this week in our last episode before Christmas and New Year's swallows those up. And also, actually, technically, the last episode before that stupid date that somebody put on this stupid calendar that actually isn't really a proper calendar and doesn't actually match up with any of our actual calendars at all or anything like that.
But it's fine.
It's fine.
It's the end of the world.
But the likelihood of there being a zombie apocalypse, the odds aren't so great as they were last week. Apparently you can't get as much money now if it does come true. The odds are not in our favour. So first up, discuss this week, other than the fact that the final part of the episode will be our games of the year, and some of yours. The first up this week, last week, the Pacific Rim trailer was released. We will be sort of, you know...
Yeah.
It looked pretty cool.
It looked very cool. In fact, actually, I think we can maybe cut to some audio for it.
Chaos is spreading around the world.
Creatures as tall as buildings are seen.
I always thought alien life would come from the stars, but it came from deep beneath the sea, a portal between dimensions in the Pacific Ocean. Something out there had discovered us. They counted on the humans to hide, to give up, to fail.
Initiating launch operations. Gypsy danger.
They never considered our ability to stand, to endure, that we would rise to the challenge.
Pilots, ready to connect.
Let's go fishing.
Two pilots engaged in neural bridge. Ready to activate the Jaeger in 3, 2, 1.
Of our hope, at the end of our time, we have chosen to believe in each other. Today we face the monsters that are at our door. Today we are canceling the apocalypse.
Did it?
Yeah.
That cool?
Yeah, well, it sounded better than cool. It certainly got my attention with...
Yeah, it did.
With that voice.
The YouTube comments that I saw on the one link that I got out was just kind of like... kind of made me laugh in amongst the trolling. Because of that. Because of most of the fact that they were mentioning the two things that the trailer made me think of. Gundam and Neon Genesis Evangelion.
Yeah.
I actually thought of Godzilla when I first saw the beasts arising from the water.
Well, to be honest, I mean, that's kind of what the mech kind of animes are a little bit sort of originating from, because it's, you know, it's big things destroying bigger things.
Yeah,
they kind of hark back to that big, huge suit thing. Someone controlling a big thing somehow, fighting an even bigger thing, which is somehow there.
Yeah.
Why is it there? It wants a fight. That's what it's there for.
I think it was the fact that it was stuff that was already on the planet, according to the trailer, and the fact that there was kind of like a Neuralink thing going on between the pilots and the great big mech suits, essentially.
Yeah, of course there is something.
Yeah, and it was just kind of like, no, this is reminding me so much of Neon Genesis Evangelion, but with less whiny teenagers.
Yeah,
which is always a good thing.
Definitely.
There again, if it's a trailer, there is still potential for whiny teenagers.
This is true. I mean, there's chances that the pilots who did look adult could have annoying kids who at some point they have to save.
But on the bright side, they may get Stodden.
Yeah.
Yes. This is like a film with a high chance of character squishage.
We'll go in the opposite way. Again, just turn into the Power Rangers and save everybody else anyway.
If these mechs combine in any way to form a bigger mech, I will not be impressed.
Arise, Megazord.
I will be ignoring any Power Rangers because, first, I've got a six-year-old nephew, so I've had far, far, far too much exposure to Power Bloody Rangers. I'll just be thinking, oh, it's like Devastator from Transformers, from the original cartoon in the 80s, not the films.
Devastator.
That's what I'll be thinking. But yeah, it's like, oh, it's big robots beating up giant monsters.
Yeah.
I would have had virtually no interest in this, apart from it's Del Toro.
Yeah.
And they've got, I can't remember the actress, but they've got GLaDOS as the suit computer voice. So it's like, I am instantly interested and I can't help it. I do apologise.
I'll probably watch it when it comes out, but the issue of how cheesy I'm going to find it due to my previous experiences with Japanese anime is another thing altogether.
Yeah. As I say, if it wasn't Del Toro and it wasn't harking back to very fond members of Portal, who everyone should have played Portal. Everyone should have played Portal by now. Come on, sure, there's no excuse. Uncomfortable silence.
I'll admit I haven't finished Portal 2.
I have. Although I don't think I've finished playing through the multiplayer.
So do you actually want me to admit I haven't played Portal or Portal Bloody 2 yet?
I think you just have.
God damn it.
You're in for a treat.
I will be, yes. Yes, I will be. Definitely. They are on my playlist, to be fair. They have been for ages. It's just other things have come.
If it's any reassurance, the first game isn't too long. Second game's a bit chunkier, though.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
But it's good.
Moving on, just a brief update on the whole Schuster family situation and stakes in Superman. And basically, if you remember, we reported that a judge had ruled that the Schuster family had no right to a 50% stake in Superman. This past week, this judge has upheld this ruling, which is that a 1992 agreement with Jean Peavy, the sister of Man of Steel co-creator Joe Schuster, precludes the estate's attempt to terminate DC Comics' copyright grant, which basically means that they don't own anything, but their lawyer Mark Toberoff has basically appealed the decision, and basically he's just pushing for more court time, so the saga continues.
So it sounds a little harsh saying they have absolutely
no right.
No rights whatsoever to it.
I mean they said it's no right to 50% stake, so whether or not you could get it to go to court and get that reduced down. But don't forget, Toberoff is the one that I think he, maybe not the Schuster situation, but the Seagulls, certainly sort of like was like, oh, you know, it seems that there's evidence of him dissuading people from settlements with Warner and DC. So.
Yeah.
Have you seen the trailer for The Man of Steel that came out last week? Quick one. It was looking really nice and dark.
I did see it, but funny thing, I wasn't able to watch it with sound. Or rather, I did have sound on, but I was in a public place at the time with lots of noise and I heard nothing.
Yeah, it's gotten a little bit darker. With sort of will he be accepted as an alien and stuff like that.
Which... And the whole thing of a school bus.
Mm, yeah. I'm liking the look of that, I have to say.
I think it's certainly going to be one of the more interesting superhero movies of next year. Actually, what superhero movies are coming out next year?
Wolverine 2.
Yes.
In Japan.
Isn't Thor 3? No, Thor 3.
Iron Man 3. It's actually out next year. That is
Thor
2
as well, isn't it? Or is that 2000?
No, Thor 2, I think it was 2014. Iron Man 3, definitely, because they had the teaser trailer in the last couple of months.
I know, it's not a superhero. Wait, when's Star Trek meant to be out?
Star Trek's next year as well.
It is?
Yeah.
Yay.
It's May, isn't it? Yeah.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, track effect.
Moving on, Garrett Hedlund, who was Sam in Tron 2, wants to come back for a third Tron.
Well, that's nice for him, isn't it?
He wants to come back so badly.
I did
find the character a little bit likable.
Yeah. Well,
I didn't entirely hate him.
Maybe just that tints you into a little bit.
Hope Cora comes back.
Mm.
Of all the problems I had with that film, he wasn't really one of them, but then he didn't really factor in at all.
Well,
I kind of liked the film, despite everything. But then
I actually quite enjoyed.
Yeah.
I did. I found it quite nice.
It needed more sin. Oh dear. Flynn Senior.
Oh right, yeah.
If only to save us from the terrible, terrible CG of
his
Clue's face.
Yeah. it kind of makes sense, you know, computer program and all.
Yeah.
Fake. But...
Yeah, but just give him a Mario, pixelated Mario Tash, and that's it. It would have looked far better and would have hidden his mouth when he wasn't speaking properly.
Giving him his accent as well.
Yeah, I liked the film, but it was a good bad film.
So, you're looking for Flynn?
Yeah.
Oh.
It's a me, Nemesis. In order to escape the grid, you have to do the Konami code on your joypad.
Give me the disc, Sam.
In further crossover discussions, I saw a picture of it must have been a SNES Mario against a slightly realistic but yet terrifying Bowser earlier.
Mm.
There are a few of those around.
Yeah, and I was just like, the Bowser essentially looked like it'd been on the Titan stuff from Arkham Asylum, Arkham City. I was just like, actually, a Mario and Batman crossover, could I live with? I think I could maybe live with that, but I'm not entirely sure in which twisted warp fictional reality that would happen.
Which way would it be? Would it be Super Mario power-ups in Gotham, or would it be... You know, it's like Batman coming into the Mushroom Kingdom.
I think it would be better if Mario went into Batman's world because, there's a slight precedent for that happening in the DC comics because there was this one time when, this whole sort of miniature cutesy Justice League ended up in the regular Justice League's universe. And stuff happened, so I think it would be better if Mario ended up in Batman's universe, as long as he didn't end up very dead and in any of our mushrooms.
Well, maybe a young Mario could see his elder brother Luigi murdered in an alleyway by gangsters. By gangster Koopas.
Well, yeah, exactly. It's just the symbol, isn't it? Batman can be anybody.
So long as the anybody is... a bit mad and warped and twisted by witnessing the death of
close family members.
Beloved, yeah.
Aye,
just so long as you're a bit.
Oh.
Yeah, you're,
Maybe Bowser could team up with the Joker and take out Peach once and for all. And fool you, Mario. No more kidnapping for you.
Oh.
Well, she is a liability. I mean, the insurance must be a nightmare.
Actually, that's a good point. Has anyone ever discussed the insurance rates for the sort of Mushroom Kingdom castle that Peach lives in? Because that must be a bitch to insure.
Maybe he doesn't insure it. Maybe that's why he always has to go out and fix it himself.
Yeah.
And that's what all the gold coins are for.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because they have implausibly high insurance rates. In fact, they're so implausibly high, they can't actually get insured. They're refused insurance. And that's why, whilst trying to rescue the princess, he has to come.
In fact, if you think about it in those terms, so none of it's insured and he has to go out and, you know, collect all the gold coins and, you know, take out all the Koopa Troopers himself. Maybe Mario is Batman's dream.
Mm.
He can't switch off. He always has to take vengeance. So he goes out and beats hoodlums up in rainy nightmare gothic Gotham. And then when he goes to sleep on his perch in the Batcave,
he dreams of Mario. Mushroom Kingdom.
Yes. Yeah. That's his safe place.
Wow.
That's his safe place. And Luigi isn't really Luigi, it's Alfred in disguise.
Yeah.
Do you know what? So does this mean when they go briefly into bits of Luigi's mansion, actually that's when the two worlds slightly combine a little?
Actually Rain Manor.
Yeah. Yeah.
See, that's it explained.
I'm sorry, I've just got this image of, Batman just, gliding across the city using his cape, and all of a sudden Mario comes along with his cape, and boing!
Boing! Boing.
Hello yeah, there, Bruce!
I can hear some of the sound effects in my head.
Reining this back into the Tron link.
Oh, yeah, that.
Oh, yeah.
So the idea of another Tron sequel, actually, I kind of like the idea. But in terms of Disney films related to video games, I'm kind of still annoyed at how long we've got to wait for Wreck-It Ralph.
Mm. I've been wanting to watch that.
Yeah. It's the fact that it's not out till next year, but it came out in the States a month ago?
Something like that.
And I don't know what Disney were thinking, that people wouldn't want to see it before Christmas. Maybe they shouldn't have tried to release it. Should have tried to release it around the time as the US, and then it would have to compete with The Hobbit.
Well, yeah, I was going to say probably ran off scared of The Hobbit, didn't they?
Everyone's run off scared of The Hobbit. Everyone.
Yeah, it's them feet. They just can't get over the size of the feet.
Well, I was saying that, obviously there's Seven Psychopaths?
If we're talking about more geeks from
Wait, in The Hobbit?
Well, actually, if you think about those dwarves. Funny
seven
thing about
psychopathic
those dwarves.
Dwarves.
Yes.
Oh, God, awesome.
But, yeah, it's just... On a slight video game update, because obviously we've had the Wii U for a little while now, I still haven't completed Zombie U. As I was discussing on Twitter before we started recording this, I've been finding the game too darn scary. Too very darn scary that I can only play it for very, very short periods of time.
Boo. The boo reigns.
Reigns.
It is genuinely one of the most scary games that I've ever played.
Which is actually quite cool to hear about a Nintendo console having one of the most scariest games ever made on it.
Yeah.
I mean, I was happy with Dead Space. I was happy with Dead Space 2. I was happy with Left 4 Dead. I was happy with Left 4 Dead 2. I was happy with the insanity effects of Eternal Darkness. Zombie U! Condemned! I was happy with Condemned. Zombie U!
It's the whole comparison to Condemned which has me thinking, I'll get that when the price is cut next year.
Yeah, no, I must.
I'm still banging on about that. I am still convinced it's going to get a price cut, the Wii U.
Yeah, it will do.
Especially as I'll very quickly point out that there was only one Wii U title in the top 40 this week in the UK. And that was Nintendo Land at number 39.
Nintendo Land.
Oh, seriously.
Or whatever it's called. Something.
Yeah, there's Nintendo Land.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Wasn't Zombie U in the top 40?
Nope.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
I think
you've actually really surprised me there.
part of the problem, at least with the Wii U's launch over here, is that the advertising campaign for it's been either lacking, or they've been chasing after the Wii audience, the main audience that it's got these days, and that's an audience that is going to be, it's going to be difficult to convince them to invest money in new hardware at the moment.
It's going to be very hard.
Yeah.
Whereas a core audience, or more of a core audience, you've got a chance of kind of going, oh, want to play games in a different way. These core games, have at it.
And I think things may pick up a bit, like, you know, after Christmas.
It's just I've seen hardly any advertising, whatever, targeted at the core market.
I actually saw an advert for Mass Effect 3 on it the other day. That looked quite
cool. That was really good when I played it on the other machines.
Yeah,
that was really good when I played it on the other machines, and I can now pick it up as a trilogy for about 15 quid cheaper than the one game.
Except it's all minus the DLC.
Yeah.
I'm still slightly peeved that they didn't bother to bring the trilogy to the Wii U, because, I mean, it's not exactly like it would have been difficult.
I don't get that one. At the same time, like you said, they've got the trilogy, including the first game on the PS3.
Yeah. So, no, it's not the full game, is it?
Isn't it?
No, I've got Mass Effect 2 on the PS3, and it's actually like a comic book graphic novel that takes
the
main event. No, that's the selection, if you want to...
No, the original game is now out on the... Yeah. Yeah, the original Mass Effect has just recently been released on... Yeah.
Oh, well, that is...
As in the last month or so, isn't it?
Because you'd have thought they'd have combined it all together.
Which I find quite interesting, because wasn't Microsoft kind of heading up,
They
published it.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
So either some rights thing or something expired, or they traded it over, or they're getting a cut somewhere down the line.
I don't know, perhaps it was EA that did some sort of dirty dealing.
No.
I reckon it must have been an expiry issue. Yeah. So they've just been waiting, because it just seemed to me that as soon as it came to, near the end of the year, which is around about when the original Mass Effect was released, on 360 years ago. So it just seemed to have been, as soon as that lapsed, it's like, whoop, bang, there you go. You can buy it on PSN and you can buy it in the triple pack. Because we've waited for this bloody long.
Yeah.
So it must have been something like a 4 or 5 year deal.
Why didn't they just do that with the Wii U?
Because it would have involved extra development time, and they obviously clearly wanted to have Mass Effect 3 ready to go on launch.
To be fair, though, I mean, you implement the controls, a bit like what they did with Metroid Prime. Metroid Prime Trilogy actually had the first two games with the Wii controls as well, so it's just like...
In the case at least of the first Mass Effect, if you were porting that, I would hope that one would at least spend time sorting out the item system that plagued the console version on 360, because that was a cruel item system. Cruel, cruel, cruel. Evil system. Moving on, because I just want to chuckle. So last week, Google Maps arrived back on the iPhone download store, on App Store, and went straight to the top of the charts. I'm assuming this kind of happened as swiftly as it did. I mean, obviously, clearly Google had it in development, sort of ace up their sleeve sort of thing. But I do wonder if a certain incident in Australia has perhaps... accelerated the release of this app.
Can you explain?
I was going to say, and what would this incident be?
Well, what would it be? I can't remember the town's name or the reserve's name, but basically, the Apple Maps version of the area had the town and the reserve either positioned incorrectly, or it said that the town was in a particular location when actually it was much further away. This is in Australia, in quite rough, rugged, harsh terrain.
basically the outback.
Yeah, not actually accurately knowing how far away the next town is can have a serious effect on your health.
Mm. And can lead to serious death.
Yes, thankfully nobody died, but it came a bit too close for comfort for some. essentially, because they didn't accurately know where the town was, and they thought that they were close when they weren't. And
I've just got this image of a couple of people crawling across the Australian desert with their mobile phones out, going saying something along the lines of, you know, I think I'm going crazy because this road is not straight.
It says here we're on the high street. It says here we're opposite the boots. It's just an angry looking kangaroo. I'm pretty sure that's not a chemist.
I mean, I was reading, I think it was on Ars Technia or something, that some people weren't too happy with privacy issues on the iPhone version of the app. Like, it was, I think there was, like, you had to opt out to stop it from checking you into places if you were signed into a Google account or whatever at the same time.
I don't know about that, but I do know that it would share map data. So if you looked somewhere up or you bookmarked a map location on your Google account.
That's it, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, and apparently you could maybe reverse engineer some of the data if you wanted.
Wow, can you just imagine if that was the day that you had to go to the GU clinic?
Your Facebook friends would commenting all day long, wouldn't they?
But no, I find it unsurprising that the app has gone down as well as it has, considering the fact that I've known people who have refused to update to iOS 6 because of Apple Maps.
Yeah.
Yeah, I saw a lot of places saying, do not update because you will get Apple Maps, and it is god-awful.
So for those of you who haven't updated, now you can, and if you're really worried about your maps situation, you could just download Google Maps.
And it is a really nice app to use as well.
Have you had a chance to mess around with it?
Yeah, it's really nice. The new Google Plus app is really nice that it launched last week as well.
Google Plus.
Google seemed to be launching quite a few updates.
I've been messing around with communities.
Yes.
Which some of you may have noticed.
I have, yes. I wondered what the hell it was, to be honest.
Yeah.
You've been invited to this community, and I was like, "Hey, what?"
For those of you interested, there is now a Cornwall and Devon Geeks Google community that is open to the public. Sign up and say hi if you're interested, because that would be great, because it would stop me posting self promotional stuff all the time.
Yeah. Anyway.
So that's that. So Maps is back on iPhone, all is well with the world.
Yeah.
And there was much rejoicing and relief.
Okay, now on to our main feature of this week. As we had our films of the year last episode, this time round is the turn of our games of the year.
Woo!
What games have stood out for us in 2021? Before we actually move on to ours, I did ask on Twitter earlier today what some people were kind of quite impressed with this year. Perhaps trying to get people to narrow it down to one was difficult because loads of people just listed tons of games. But Loading Cafe and Bar at Drink for Lex Play on Twitter. So currently XCOM/Far Cry 3 are their games of the year, but they've just started the first Walking Dead game. So, you know, that could change. And then Johnny tweeted at us that his were The Walking Dead, Spelunky, and Super Hexagon. But with FTL being a close runner-up, he said it needed more content. And then I asked him if he had to pick just one. And he said probably The Walking Dead. But XBLA, Spelunky would be a close second. So,
I know, I like the way you said Expla.
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 Expla. But what are our favourites? Well, I'd like to introduce you to this trailer. And then perhaps You can guess what it is.
Yep.
Journey, released on the PlayStation Network earlier this year, and it was just an amazing game to play through. It lasts about 2 hours, but it is it plays with your emotions on a level that I've never had them played before within a game. The storytelling is just brilliant. There's no talking or anything during the game. It's all done by the actions you're following, and also with the music. The musical score has got to be one of the best I've heard in years on a game.
It is gorgeous.
And the art style of it is just breathtaking. It is amazing. If you haven't played it and you've got a PlayStation 3, download it now. It's just amazing. And the multiplayer is quite cool as well, because you never actually know who you're playing with.
I was always a bit confused about the multiplayer when I saw people tweeting about it. So how do people end up in your game, or you in their game, or
they just drop in?
Okay.
I mean, I honestly thought I was actually playing with a friend. It was before I got a headset that worked with the PlayStation 3, and I thought I was playing with him all the way through to the end, and I was like, yes, we've done it, and then it actually tells you at the end who you've been playing with, and there's about a list of 10 different people, and he wasn't even in it. He'd actually gone to. I was like, hey, what's going on here? But no, it's just an amazingly, brilliantly game, and it was such a refreshing game as well.
It is art.
It is a pure piece of art, yeah, definitely.
Yeah, I mean, anyone who complains that a game can't be art has not played
Journey. Simple as that. I mean, the other nice thing is, in a year where we've had loads of sequels, this was just a really fresh IP with some really good originality to it. And just,
what genre was the game?
It's like a 3D sort of platformer.
Okay.
I suppose.
I'd say kind of
with a puzzle.
Yeah, puzzle platform exploration.
Yeah.
I mean, when you said about the art style and the music, I remember a game. This isn't my game of the year, by the way, but I remember a game earlier this that launched on Steam and whatnot. That was called Dust Force, which was also really good for musical score and animation and graphics.
Oh yes, I vaguely recall now what you're referring to. No, Journey, from what I've seen, I don't have I don't play on PSN. PS3 is actually quite a advanced game.
It's an amazing game, and in fairness, I would say that it's a really, really good reason to actually buy a PlayStation 3.
Together with the other games from the same developer, that game company.
Mm. Yes, because they did Flower as well, didn't they?
Yeah, Flow and Flower.
They are an amazingly talented group of people.
They are one of the best reasons for having a PS3.
Did you guys have to avoid Twitter? I specifically remember people spoiling stuff from Journey because it got released to some people. I think Journey's a bit earlier. And then they were tweeting stuff. And then people were getting annoyed that they were tweeting stuff.
No, I managed to ignore that, to be honest with you.
I remember seeing stuff, but frankly, the way the story is told, it's something you have to play.
It is, because it takes you on. The best way for me to explain it was, an emotional, spiritual experience. I know people will probably say, bugger that for a laugh. But
yeah, people will be going, yeah.
Yeah, but it was actually like that. And if to everybody I've spoken to, it's affected them in different ways. You know, it's brought different emotions up. It's brought different reasonings up. And everybody that I've spoken to has got a slightly different experience to the one you've experienced before with it as well, which is quite cool. I don't know if you found that, Retroid.
I mean, most of the people I know, I'm one of the few PS3 players amongst them.
Mm.
But yeah, I know a few people with PS3s, and they really enjoy that game company's games. And with this, we were just talking about it, and it's like with some films where the way they tell the story, you can sit there and talk about what you think it meant.
Yeah.
And there are little snippets of animation, if you can call them that, sort of animated carvings that you come across with in the game world. And they tell you what happened to your people, from what I can gather.
Yeah.
And it's that kind of thing where you can just see how things progressed, and it foretells the ascent of the civilization and the downfall. And none of it is really spoilerific. It's just the way it's told. It's the experience of finding these things in these different locations, the locations themselves, the things in these locations, and what the animations show you. It all sort of keys together. It's just really well done.
Mm. Mind blowing.
But yeah, when it comes to spoilers, it's just I'm not sure if it can be spoilers.
No, because everybody has their own take on what they've seen and what they've done. Because it's open to your own view of it all. It's how you perceive it, not how they want you to perceive it. It's how you actually perceive it in the game.
Yeah,
which is just a stroke of genius.
Going back to the sort of randomly assigned co-players.
Mm-hmm.
Reminds me a bit of Dark Souls, a bit, because of the fact that you can't actually actively team up with people. The people that end up in your game are random.
Can't team up with them, because at times I was actually helping somebody to actually get to higher ledges and that sort of thing.
Well, it's not all that you can't actively select to go into a person's game.
Oh yeah, no.
So
that's true.
You were saying, Retro?
I was just going to say, in Dark Souls, is there any way another player can grief you, or you can grief the player?
I'm pretty sure there might be, yeah.
Yeah, whereas in Journey there isn't. You can only do positives.
Yeah.
No griefing.
You can't do anything to disadvantage the other player. You can't knock them off ledges. You can't adversely affect them, which is what makes it such a stroke of genius.
Okay.
Because in most other games, if someone says, and you get teamed with random people off the internet, that's going to just chill your blood.
Yeah.
And say, oh God, no, I want to turn that off.
Yeah.
Whereas in Journey, it's not an issue at all. And that's what is so surprising about it, just the way they've done it.
Okay. Moving on to our next game. Can you guess what it is?
I never asked for the darkness. It chose me. Gave me its power. But like everything else, it came with a price.
Jackie, this was not your fault.
And now, it's mine to control.
We've come for the darkness, Jackie. Give it to us!
You want it?
you haven't been able to guess, that was the trailer for The Darkness 2. Yeah. Brilliant game. Actually, probably one of the most flawed games of this year. That was AAA. Yeah, it was absolutely, for me, beautiful at the same time. Am I the only person that's played it, though? Or has anyone else managed to play it this year?
No, I've played it too.
Cool. So, yeah, so I originally played it for review over on Beef Jack, and I kind of struggled with the review because I really, 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 really loved the original game. The original game is quite a moment in gaming history on the current generation, mostly because of the level of emotion that they put into it and the characterization that happens with the main characters being quite wow. How, you know, what the hell? Oh my god, you just did that. How could you do that? Yeah, that
particular moment.
Yeah, that particular moment. I don't really want to spoil that too much for people. For those who don't know, I mean, The Darkness 2 does take place after The Darkness, but it was actually made by a different studio, whereas the original was made by Starbreeze. The sequel was made by Digital Extremes. It's a couple of years after the original. They actually did a, because it's based off the Top Cow comics of the same name, they did actually do a sort of in-between comic for Free Comic Book Day last year that kind of detailed how Jackie had been feeling since the events of the first game.
A bit sad.
Yeah, very sad. Very, very sad. But at the same time, he's like become head of like one of the biggest crime families in New York, so you know it's not all bad.
A bit of a distraction.
But obviously The Darkness, which is his gift, curse, yada yada, it makes it easy to tear people into tiny, tiny little pieces and rip out their hearts still from those tiny, tiny little pieces and eat those hearts and take spines out of bodies and impale them with, you know, sort of rebars. And The Darkness 2, so it was a different game to the original Darkness. It was a rather than going for the realistic style that the original game went for, they Digital Extremes decided to go for a more sort of comic book look,
because they vaguely cell shaded
with some odd bit of sort of realistic texturing here and there,
but more sort of graphic novel-y painted not cell shaded as in it looks like a cartoon,
and more like an actual comic.
It looks very nice.
And they changed the character design of Jackie a bit. There was a different voice actor for Jackie. The voice of the Darkness power itself was still, I can never remember his name. We'll have to ignore that. But he was back. I think that was pretty much everyone from the original stuff, really. But anyway, so it's, you know, it had a whole sort of reshine and everything. And it was a really good game in the sense that it was quite powerful and moving, and it ended incredibly too soon.
It did.
It was.
I wanted it to be longer. I wanted there to be more discussion with the Darkness.
Who
has a absolutely bloody fantastic voice.
If anything, the game wasn't perhaps as balanced in terms of styles of gameplay as the original game. The original game had a good balance. You could either go quite stealthy through things, or you could go all out action. But in the sequel, it was kind of like, if you're playing as Jackie, it was pretty much all action. If you were playing as one of the creations that you can make from the Darkness, then you could be stealthy, but the levels that you did that on, they were very few.
Very, very few.
Yeah, and it was just kind of like, oh, I kind of want my stuff, because that's one of the things that they've always had in the comics, even with the sort of several reboots that they've done now, is that it's like, yeah, Jackie could go into a place, tear it all up to shreds, kill everyone within seconds, and be absolutely covered in blood. Or he could sneak about and slowly just slice everyone's throats without them realizing what's hit them. you know, there was always the option. And so that's perhaps the one thing, one of the main things, that, other than the length, that disappointed me about The Darkness 2. But it's still one of my games of the year because of how it was still a pretty powerful storyline. That
in some ways it was a much straighter story than the original.
Yeah.
There was less shock.
At the same time, though, I kind of liked its one that flew over the cuckoo's nest kind of moments.
Yeah, I like those.
Where, it's kind of like, because it had that whole sort of that and the fact that there was a bit of almost like a Slayer Interrupted, which was Buffy comic and an episode where you're not entirely sure about the sanity of Buffy anymore, and that was pretty good, and they did that they sort of emulated that pretty well.
I quite liked in those sections you could see there were little Darkness comics playing around,
yeah, and they were actual covers as well, which was pretty cool. If you've not played either of the two games but you've read some of the comics, in a way the game's not really that much like the comics in terms of Jackie's attitude towards life and women. the Jackie of the games is a far more sober fellow and less likely to kind of be worried about things. And they also, that was one thing that in the first game, the lore was a bit more clear with the Darkness. And in the second game, they kind of messed with the lore a bit and they kind of messed around with bits of lore, which I would have thought they would have kept sacrosanct because of the way it kind of developed the character, which was the fact that they insinuated that Jackie knew his father in the video game, in the second one.
Yes, they did.
Whereas in the comics, Jackie has never known his father because the moment Jackie was conceived, his father died, as is the particular nature of having the Darkness.
Because it's transferred,
Yeah. Through the male line. So it was just kind of like, I wasn't too keen on the fact they messed with that, but then at the same time, they actually built up a whole world of lore in the second one because they had the relics, and each of the relics which you could collect had a story behind them, which was read up by the character of Johnny, who was this crazy kind of occultist guy.
The insane expert.
Yeah, the insane expert who knew everything and could describe things in the most animated manner. In fact, you might have seen some of the story trailers for him where he's this skinny, blonde-haired dude that is hyper and, like, explains things. What happened. In fact, he actually gives a recap. You can choose to watch it at the beginning of the game, of the events of the first game. And it is actually quite well done. You can choose to skip it, but often when I've pre-played the game, I haven't. So that was pretty cool. The one thing that they did bring back with the sequel, which I was surprised they did, was having some multiplayer. And that was Vendettas, which you could play with, I think, up to 3 other people online. Or you could play it through its various sort of bits of story on solo. And basically you had these 4 different characters available who had weapons that had been imbued with the power of Darkness. And you had like there was a crazy beer-bellied Scotsman.
Okay.
I think he was Scottish. I haven't played the game for a while. But he's certainly from this part of the world. This slightly crazy kind of Japanese or Chinese guy. This one female character and somebody else. And it was just kind of like... Oh, the female character was somebody who was in, like, Mossad or something, you know, the Israeli secret forces.
Yeah.
At one point. And you can go through a series of missions which loosely tie in with the events of the main game. And that was quite interesting to play through when you were trying to get people to cooperate with you online. Because unlike the multiplayer of the original game, which was more kind of like sort of deathmatch stuff, really... This you kind of had to work together, or else it would all go horribly wrong. And actually, if you started a multiplayer, this is another one of the flaws of this game. If you started a multiplayer game online without anybody with you, the difficulty of the game did not scale.
Oh, that sounds good.
Yeah, so it would attack you like you had four people there. At least it did when I was playing it, which was a bit problematic. Especially if everyone that you were playing with drops out.
Mm-hmm.
And you're near the end of a level, and there's a boss with lots of minions.
So I will take all four of you on. Just me!
Yeah. So that was a bit of a pain. But, yeah, so you're probably wondering, why is the Doctor's 2 my game of the year? Okay, just to make it clear, the storyline, despite being short, was very strong. The characters were really well acted, and it was a beautiful game to look at.
I just wanted more of it.
Yes, and I do hope Digital Extremes do actually get to make a third game. I really, really do, because I think they could do a very good job if they're allowed to continue with it. But moving on, can you guess what game this is?
Hypocrite. You are the one who has made your heart a prison.
You again? What are you talking about?
Even if you are not the prisoner.
Huh?
That way.
Name's Sam.
I'm Riku.
All for one
and one for all.
Who's my conscience? He's taught me all kinds of important stuff. Maybe you just need somebody to show you what's right and wrong.
You've got an idea.
And it might even be a good one, too. Hold on.
Sure. Take your time. If it's all right with you, can I go help Sora and Riku out?
How?
Follow the hearts, and you'll find the way. That's something Master Aqua told me once.
You made us a promise.
I did?
That you'd always be there. To bring us back.
Yeah.
Got it memorized?
Try.
Why?
That's what we do. Put the most precious memories in the back of our minds where they're safe.
Just like the rest!
I don't know how you did it, but you really have found a way to trap darkness inside your heart.
So what? At least I know who to blame for it.
Ooh. I see you still got that angry look.
Kingdom Hearts Dream Drop Distance for the 3DS. part of the reason why it is my game of the year is basically because I haven't played too many games this year. That's not to kind of put down Kingdom Hearts, but it's one of the few that I have actually played from this year.
This got voted over Resident Evil 6. Be thankful.
Yeah, Resident Evil 6 was finicky. Although it was better on single player, in a way. But yeah, anyway, so Kingdom Hearts Dream Drop Distance, obviously another title in the franchise. It felt like it was leading up to Kingdom Hearts 3, and there was quite a few story revelations that, you know, I've been waiting for, you know, quite a while to hear about.
Where does it fit in the, because the chronology and stuff of the game series is a little bit weird. Where does this fit?
It's basically the last one so far. So
if you were going to order them.
Yep. So, well, going through the entire series, there's Birth by Sleep, which happens before the original Kingdom Hearts. Mm-hmm. Then there's Chain of Memories and 5325 over 6 days or something like that.
The one with the weird name.
Yeah. With Roxas as main character. Then there's then it fits in Kingdom Hearts 2. Then I think Kingdom Hearts Recoded or something like that was
meant to be in some way there.
And then it's Kingdom Hearts Dream Drop Distance.
So, first Kingdom Hearts game on the 3DS.
Yeah.
What did you think?
Let's see. Well, it would have been nice to actually have, you know, decent, reliable, you know, characters to actually kind of guide you through your journey. Like with, you know, the original Kingdom Hearts, you have, you know, Donald and Goofy. Mm. It would have been nice to have the same type of thing. And for some reason, they don't seem to like putting in the Final Fantasy characters in any but the, you know, main series, which is kind of bizarre in a way. So it's kind of wound off into its almost its own little world, to be honest.
Which is ironic, considering.
Yeah, I mean, you kind of revisit some of the, you know, Disney type worlds, but a lot of it was actually focused on like Donald and well on Mickey Mouse and stuff,
okay.
Which is a bit weird. So say for example, Three Musketeers was in there.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Right.
And cool. Yeah, it's quite fun, and you're kind of playing as both Riku and Sora, and you're kind of switching between the two. Like, one kind of goes to sleep, while the other one wakes up, and you play through their story for a certain amount of time, and then you kind of switch over. So it's a bit of a weird kind of switching over system, because it's not kind of set in the story, where you kind of, you know, switch over.
Mm.
So say, for example, if, you know, you really want to go forward with one character, you can get to the point where, you know, the story just doesn't, you know, make sense from the other perspective at that time.
So you actually need to be actively switching.
Yeah, you will automatically switch, or you can, you know, switch whenever you like as well. Well, up to a point. But, yeah, it was a kind of bizarre system. I did like it to a certain extent, and it was quite action orientated, obviously, because the series is. There's a lot of you know, interesting you know, moves and whatnot.
How did they do the moves this time? I mean, was it, what kind of system was it? An MP system? Was it a card system? They've used several different systems to do special attacks.
It's pretty much a regular kind of Kingdom, like a bit like Kingdom Hearts 2, where you have, you know, the regular attacks, and you have also the context sensitive attacks.
Mm.
So you know, if you're, you know, daze a certain enemy and, you know, you hit the button, bam, all of a sudden it will do a special move for it.
Did you have magic?
Yes, you did. Let's see, obviously you didn't have like anything like summons, unfortunately, which would have been nice, but yeah, they seem to have kind of taken the Final Fantasy elements out of it so far, which I've found a bit bizarre. But it has been enjoyable, and as I said, you know, part of the reason why I like it was actually because it does add to the storyline quite a bit, and it kind of shows you some of the kind of goings on about the story, because I'm not sure whether you know much about the Kingdom Hearts series, but nothing's ever fully explained to you. You kind of have to kind of read between the lines a lot of the time in order to figure stuff out. And, yeah.
Will you be sorely disappointed if Kingdom Hearts 3 isn't kind of like the next main game?
I wouldn't necessarily say that I would be disappointed, but I would be surprised because this...
Have they run out of backstory to really tell before?
Not necessarily run out of backstory per se, but it feels like this one was gearing up for, you know, Kingdom Hearts 3. I mean, I don't want to give away the story, but it does ramp up so that, you know, the threat is even greater than, you know, before. And, you know, you come face to face with the big bad evil, you know, just once kind of thing right at the very end. And, you know, it is quite a good game. And the only problem is that obviously in order to really enjoy it, you kind of need to have gone through the entire
They're very long games.
And I think to a certain extent it's helped by the fact that it does actually have a fairly decent and enjoyable battle system to a certain extent. You know, cool. It is kind of actiony. Okay, so it's kind of button pressy, but it is quite fun.
Bless you.
I have to say the Kingdom Hearts games have just utterly passed me by.
That's all right.
I've played the original on the PlayStation 2 and I really enjoyed it.
Yeah.
I like the mixture of Disney with sort of Final Fantasy. It seemed to work really well for me.
Yeah, and I was actually quite surprised about the graphics because the graphics on the 3DS game is actually, you know, quite reasonable.
I haven't picked up a Kingdom Hearts game since the 300 days one, mostly because it took me so blooming long to get through it, and I was playing it against the clock because I had a review to do at the time. So,
admittedly, yeah. I've never completed that one. I've completed Kingdom Hearts, Chain of Memories, Kingdom Hearts 2, Birth by Sleep. I haven't actually played Recoded.
Yeah, they haven't... I can't remember if they actually got around to properly releasing that in some respect, at least in North America, but Recoded was only originally available in Japan because it was a mobile game.
Originally, but I do believe that they ported it to either the DS. Yeah, I think it was the DS.
It was the DS, I believe, wasn't it? Or was it the PS? No, the PSP was a different one, wasn't it?
No, that was Birth by Sleep.
Yeah, Birth by Sleep. So yeah, it was the DS.
Well, Birth by Sleep was actually a really good game as well, but obviously it wasn't this year.
Did you enjoy it overall more to Resident Evil 6, considering these are two games of late judgment?
I think I did, to a certain extent, mostly because Resident Evil 6, I actually had a better time once, you know, I'd completed the game once through, and I decided basically, because obviously with Resident Evil 6 you have, you know, one of two characters that you play as, so I decided to go through the game again as the other character that I didn't play as, but this time, basically because I'd kind of gone through it once, I could actually buy the skills for infinite ammo, and couple that with the fact that if you're actually playing with a computer, then they don't actually pick up any ammo themselves because they have like an unlimited supply,
or
it seems.
All health items, one assumes.
All health items. So basically every item that I come across, I didn't have to share, which made the game more action-based. And I think I found one of the tricks to the quick time events, which is basically those breakout, which was a skill that was kind of meant to allow you to kind of break out of zombies' grips easier, or, you know, Javaro, whatever. And I think that was meant to work well on the regular kind of cutscenes as well. So
okay.
I found it much easier the second time around, strangely enough.
Okay, I think we shall move on to our final game of this evening, today, tonight, whenever you listen to this. Can you guess what it is?
The shit you've done, any other soldier would have been tried, court-martialed, and discharged.
That way they grounded me, took away my ship.
None of them have seen what you've seen. You've been there, in the trenches, fighting with them. You know what they're capable of.
thing or two about killing Reapers.
This isn't about strategy or tactics. This is about survival. The Reapers are here.
The city is not reinstated, Commander.
Tell your friends we're coming for them.
And that was, of course, Mass Effect 3. Woo! Now... Where to start with this game? If you were lucky enough to get the original on 360, if you had a 360 at the time and didn't unfortunately start off with a whole rigmarole with the PS3 having to start with Mass Effect 2 because of rights issues, that's now been solved, thankfully. But now we've got the entire story of Commander Shepard and the Reapers, which sounds like some kind of weird kids series. But there you go. You can't have everything.
Commander Shepard and the Reapers.
Yes, Commander Shepard. Oh, good name for a band, actually. But yeah. So it's got more and more sort of action based, shootery based as the series has progressed, but it's still got some good RPG roots to it. Especially with shields, armor, the type of weapons, the type of abilities and ammo types you can use when you're attacking either Cerberus, who are one of the main protagonists in Mass Effect 3, or the Reaper forces, which are the ones that you're supposed to be fighting against, but Cerberus is all mixed up in the middle, whether it's, you know, a good thing or a bad thing, and yeah. It's really rather good.
I've got an important question on the Cerberus front.
Oh yeah.
Obviously, the ending of Mass Effect 2, and you've got the option of what to do at the end with certain things. If you don't hand that over, are they as souped up as they are in Mass Effect 3 or not?
Now, you see, that is one of the little issues. I am obsessive enough to have played through all of the games several times. I have a good FemShep, who's my custom character, because, of course, you weren't given a proper female face in the first two games. It's only with the third one that they actually sat down and thought, we'd better design a face. Instead of just having a generic kit face, which is what you're given. So I've got the good FemShep, who has done all the lovely things throughout the series, like you know, saving certain species and being nice and not turning over things.
Cool.
To Cerberus. And I've got my my man Shep, who goes around punching puppies, drowning kittens, and being as much of an arse as he possibly can be, just to see how much of a difference it will make. I could save this species, or I could fill the tank with acid. What's Manship going to do? Oh, he's already emptied the acid into it. I didn't even have to choose; he just did it. And
does it make quite a bit of difference, does it? Or?
Yeah, that is one of the issues. With what Emily was asking, if you hand over something, there are two things. There's a character you can hand over. I'm trying to be as unspoilery as possible. In Mass Effect 2, there's a character you can hand over to Cerberus, and there's a thing you can hand over to Cerberus.
I think it's the thing I'm more worried about.
Yeah. I played through on Insanity on both, and it didn't seem to make any difference whatsoever.
No.
It's referenced in dialogue.
But it doesn't actually make any difference in the gameplay at all.
Can I just ask? Oh, sorry. What was you going to say? I was going to ask, right, basically, because obviously they've advertised the entire thing as kind of go your own way, you know, either be good, be bad, just play the game type thing.
Yeah.
And I've not, well, whenever I've kind of gone through the good side, I've always obviously come up with a kind of set of sequences, of events, you know, to open up to the next story, to the next story, to the next story.
Yeah.
If you play, but as far as I can tell, if you're playing as a bad character and you get people killed and stuff like that, does that actually cut the game shorter, or is there some other content, some other storylines that you get to play instead of it?
It depends. There are characters who... I will say, with the end of the second game being the suicide mission.
Mm. Yes.
I specifically set out to get as many killed as I could when I played through the evil version. Again, just to see how much of a difference it made. Because I was being very meticulous, making sure I chose the right people and making sure they got out alive.
Yeah.
When I was playing through on my good playthrough. On the evil playthrough, I've lost characters like, I'll just say, inverted commas, Samara. You know, anyone who's played through as evil on the second game will know precisely what I'm talking about. Mm. Let's see. I handed over the character. I got several of the other ones killed. Now, certain characters will pop up in number three, but as an example, if you lost Rex in the first game, you just get a drop in bit of a git half brother. So instead of Erd not Rex, you get Erd not Reeve.
Oh, lovely.
Yeah, who is a surly Krogan. That's a bit of a turn up for the books there.
I am a Dr. Reeve. You killed my brother. Now prepared to die.
Yes. Or, as it turns out, he never liked Rex anyway. He thought he was a bit of a...
You did him a
bit of a softy tosser.
You know, bit of a little bit of trivia, but on Perfect Dark on the N64, there was one of the guards on the Pelagic 2, like on the one of the missions, where if you actually shot a guy in the head, that this other guard would come over to him and say something, and one of the things that he might have said was, "I never liked him anyway."
Yeah, that's kind of a not Reeve. I mean, the whole choice thing is a bit of a mixed bag. It's like with the there's a species you can save in the original game, which is the Rachni.
Yeah, the Rachni. Yeah.
As it turns out, the only difference if you wiped those out in the first game is dialogue.
You'd have thought it would have affected things a bit more deeply than that.
Yes, I was wanting that, so I was very annoyed when I found out that if you play it through when the Queen of the Rachni was killed in the first game, it doesn't actually matter.
That's annoying.
Yeah, they turn up as, you know, indoctrinated Reaper creatures.
Yeah.
In the third game, and it's just, well, I can kind of see why, but on the other hand, it just feels a bit of a cheat.
Yeah.
There are other things like, some of the characters who survived in the second game, if any, do turn up, and they have extra missions, and they will add layers. Otherwise, if they're not there, like there's an Asari mission that you have to do.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, inverted commas, Samara was dead in my Manship playthrough. And it simply goes pretty much as is, but has at least one less cutscene.
That's
so annoying. There are other things like the fate of the Krogan
Oh yeah, yeah.
That seems to be far more affected by things you did.
Yes.
Okay. And of course, there are certain things you can do with the Quarians.
Mm.
And if you so choose, you can go all out in favour of the Quarians. You can make sure the Geth aren't a concern anymore in Mass Effect 3, but all that really does is it makes the cutscene slightly different at the end.
Yeah, all right.
Also, obviously...
That's all right then, because I've just got to that bit.
Yeah.
I think I made the right wrong choice, but obviously not. Awesome.
But also part of the thing, though, is that all of this builds, in the third game, builds towards your galactic readiness rating.
Yes.
And if you've fudged over too many species in the previous games and in a bit of three, then your galactic readiness rating is going to be pretty shocking. So you would then have to play a lot of multiplayer in order to be able to get anything resembling a win scenario in the final mission.
Right.
Well, see, that's the thing. I still have, you know, there are several species I've given the short straw to in my manship playthrough, but my galactic readiness rating is exactly the same as in my good playthrough.
Oh.
Hmm.
That's annoying.
Which means it's stuck on 50% because I don't play multiplayer.
Yeah.
And the multiplayer, yes, I'm fine. You know, I'm fine with it being there, and I'm sure it's very nice because I do know, you know, I have friends who play the multiplayer. But at the moment, because of finances, I am not a gold member on Xbox Live, and I can't be asked, you know, carting around my profile or upgrading it for, you know, a month or so at a time just so I can get my galactic readiness rating on that to go up. So it annoys the hell out of me that no matter what I do, I mean, I've played through the game three times now, twice on Insanity, and it's stuck at 50%. When you spend 40 hours each, you know, each playthrough, that's a little bit annoying. Mm.
Mm.
But yeah, you can be completely missing some species on the final assault.
Wow.
On the whole, though, it doesn't seem to make that much of a difference. So
I think what we really need to know, though, is why, though, it's your game of the year, other than your obsessive playing of it on Insanity difficulty.
Well, given that most games, by the time I reach the end of them, I'm pleased I've played them and I'm pleased I've completed them, but I can usually just let them go. You know, I've completed you, you're on the shelf. I might mop up a few achievements or trophies, but, you know, on the whole, once I've completed a game, that's it for, you know, at least a few years, unless I want to replay it after that. But when it comes to this game, it's just there's something about it where it's the storyline, the universe they've created, which is just, to me, it's one of the best sci-fi universes that exists. It's just so cohesive and it works so well. It's like a cross between, it's more Star Wars than it is Star Trek, with biotics in the place of the Force. But it has little things like there are the species who they can't exist on each other's worlds because they're simply too different. Or there's the Turians who can, you know, walk around and breathe the same air as humans, but the way their base pairs, their amino acids are, you know, different, so if they eat any human food they'll go into toxic shock and vice versa.
And it makes hanky panky between the two species rather difficult as well.
Oh yes, as I was warned with my good Shep, my femme Shep playthrough by
Morden.
Yes, yeah. Thank you. I just temporarily forgot his name. I am gay for Morden, by the way. Morden's awesome. Morden warns my femship that because of the the problems with amino acid, there are some toxic shock issues if there is, as he says, ingestion.
Have to say the, like, attention, the attention to detail with sci-fi, well, this type of sci-fi, is actually, you know, absolutely key.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. It makes it, it's just a far more believable world. And even though they've fixed the ending now, so that's a relief. And I'll say again, the issues that people had with the endings was not how it turned out for Shepard, as some people were trying to make it out. People don't like a sad ending. As you know, as the ending can be in certain circumstances. My issue with the ending was that it seemed to stop. It didn't give much explanation at all. It didn't tell you all the effort that you poured into the world over those three games with the different choices you'd made. It gave little to no resolution to what your choices had resulted in. Whereas they have fixed that with the extended ending. So I am pleased about that, and that there is more explanation, because otherwise it was just you turned up at the ending, it gave you a choice, it didn't really explain why or how or what was going to happen, and it just stopped there with a very short cutscene. Whereas all that is extended now, and it gives you more information while not giving you the entire picture, which I am fine with, thank you very much. It felt like being shortchanged with all the effort that had been, you know, put into the world, the different species, the lore. It's not called a codex, I don't think, but all the information you could look up on the Normandy's computer about all the different species and their histories, and you know, the various wars and the council races, and you know, all the issues in that, all that effort had been poured in, and it just stopped like that. But now it's like, yeah, the original ending annoyed me so much that I couldn't go back and play it, because it soured it for me. But I went back, I played through the final Earth mission once I'd re-downloaded the DLC. And yeah, it works a lot better. Speaking of DLC, the Leviathan DLC that they released also fleshes out some information on the ending as well. No spoilers on that, but yeah, the Leviathan DLC is playing simply because of the background information it gives. And it fits in nicely with the ending. So that's what I mean about all the care with the universe.
Yeah.
I simply want more Mass Effect.
All right. Awesome. I think on that note, we're going to have to call it a night and a year. Because as I sort of said earlier, this is the last podcast you will get from us this side of Christmas and New Year's. We will be back again. If the world doesn't end, we will be back for your listening pleasure on January the 8th of 2013.
Woo! The future.
We'd be back the week before, but actually that means that we would be recording on New Year's Eve and stuff and trying to release it on New Year's. And you guys aren't going to listen. We want a party.
Yeah, that would be a very bad thing to do.
Exactly. So we'll be back on the 8th, guys. And girls, hopefully. So it's good night from...
It's good night from me, Paul Wood. Super Retroid on Twitter and retroid@eurogamer.net.
It's good night from me, Paul, a.k.a. onearmed_cookie on Twitter. And you can also find me lurking around at gamejar.com. Merry Christmas and have a fantastic new year.
Woohoo!
It's good night from me, Paul Blewitt. I have a website, paul-blewitt.com. That's BLEWITT, just in case, because I'm getting no visitors at the moment. So that's all right. And I'm Paul Blewitt on Twitter as well.
And I'm Emily King, and you can find me on Twitter at EK6891. You can also visit my website at ek-creations.com. I just want to say that this month, the first short comic I've ever, or any comic I've ever had published, has actually been published.
Woo! Congratulations!
Congratulations!
And if you have any means of getting stuff from the Final Frontier stores in Plymouth or St Austell, they should be handling copies of The Pilgrim Volume 1, which has my little short comic in it called Back Row, which I wrote. Anyway, so yeah, but as for nerds, well, where can you find us? Well, you can find us at www.nerdsassemble.co.uk. We're also on iTunes. You can also find us at www.gamesfiends.com. We're on Twitter at Nerds Podcast. We're on Facebook on Nerds as Nerds Assemble Podcast. We're on Google Plus as Nerds Assemble Podcast. We're everywhere. So
we're right behind you.
Have a lovely Christmas and a very wonderful New Year, and we will see you in 2013. Good night.
Good night.
Good night.